From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Today on our show, Spoon. They've been making music for 20 years. In 2010, they decided to take a break. Burt Daniel went on to form the band Divine Fits. Jim Eno producing a lot, and other members of the band doing side projects. Today on All Songs Considered, a conversation with Burt Daniel and Jim Eno about They Want My Soul, their new record. And we hear bits of the record. We'll hear about the making of the record. Robin Hilton and I are in D.C. Burt and Jim are in Austin, Texas. We begin the conversation by playing this song, Rainy Taxi, from Spoon. I love so much of what's going on here. One thing that reminded me of was that Spencer Davis song, Give Me Some Lovin'. And so... instant.
Oh, yeah, right.
How did Field get back together and play? How long had it been since you guys were playing?
Well, we played a couple shows in the interim, but really it had been basically 3 years.
2010 was our last tour, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Is that the longest break?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by far.
So you get back together, you start to play. I don't know if this song was your first or fourth or eighth song, but you've got a
this
group.
This is one of the first ones. Yeah.
So tell me about what that was like to start playing again in the same room.
It was good. I mean, we took a good break. I mean, between 2001 and 2010, we put out 5 records, which is not, I guess, not a lot by 60s standards, but it's in terms of today's standards, it's pretty fast. I mean, especially since concert promoters run the business now, and that's the way you make money, is doing shows, you know? So we just needed a break.
Couldn't stand each other.
We needed a break, and so when we got back together, I felt it, that like that break was a good thing, and we were all excited about playing again.
Yeah, it was fun.
Let's give it a listen to what's going on here.
Like one of my favorite bridges.
Yeah.
It's so right awesome. Here. Yeah. Amazing bridge. And if you say run, I may run with you. I got nothing else. I got nowhere
else. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Feels good.
Producer always wanted us to make that happen 2 or 3 times in the song, that section.
It's because it's so good.
And we just kept saying, but it's a bridge.
But it's a bridge. It only happens once.
Who is the producer? And this is not a usual thing for you guys to work with a producer.
We worked, we did the record in 2 halves. We did the first half, we were working with Joe Ciccarelli. And we went and mixed the first half with Dave Fridman. And then after that experience, we thought, maybe we'd be more suited to do the second half with Dave Fridman.
What was it about the experience that made you say that?
It just seemed like a better mix, better combination for getting the songs across. And we knew that there were some sort of stranger songs coming up in the second half. And it seemed like it would be a better fit. We didn't want to be battling it out with Joe too much more. And Dave really took to it. They're very, very different producers.
How so?
How would you say, Jim? I mean, Joe is what? He's sort of a very straight-ahead rock guy.
Yeah.
He's been doing it a long time. I mean, he was telling us one of his first sessions was when the Bee Gees were recording More Than a Woman, which I found fascinating.
Yeah. A lot of his experience is also maybe on the mainstream side, leaning more towards radio.
Right. And Dave, you know, does all the Flaming Lips records, and he's a character.
I mean, he's also the kind of producer that doesn't hold something like super dear, which I feel is like a really good quality in a producer. So like, if we're like, we're not really feeling that, he's like, okay, cool. You know, he understands that it's our record, and he really wants to make
nice.
Us happy. You know,
did you find them pushing you in directions that you wouldn't have gone otherwise, and in ways that surprised you and that you liked?
Yeah, for sure.
Who? Both of them?
Yeah. You said Joe. Well, you used the word battle to describe working with Joe. So I don't know. I'm sure you're kidding. But
sort of.
Well, tell us about
sometimes
that.
A battle is good. I mean, making a record is about a collaboration of a lot of ideas, you know, and it's not going to be as good if it's just one person's ideas. So we like to make sure that the whole band is contributing, that the producers are contributing. And when you can kind of work something out that way, then you know you're going to be ending up with a better end product. But Dave had a lot of great ideas that we wouldn't have thought of ourselves. It's nice to work with a producer who brings a lot to the table like that. You know, I mean, there's a song called Knock, 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 where it's got all these string runs in it and sort of whispering chant sounds. And this is not stuff that was on the demo. You know, I mean, it was stuff that he saw fit to put in. And when we heard it, we were amazed.
Like insane guitar and stuff. Like
Yeah.
It's like,
I'm going to play a little. Because, yeah, I remember that moment, too, right about 2 minutes into this song.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
And it starts all over again. You said you were living in a buttoned-up world, living in 1892. Say to convince me, or to blame nobody but you.
What a brilliant moment. Who stuck their finger in this light socket?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy, that Dave Fridlin.
Tell me how. There are two things that happened there. One is the guitar you talked just a bit about. So what the heck is going on that guitar that makes that amazing sound?
We wish we knew, because once we recorded the record, then we went about trying to learn the songs live, and nobody could remember what pedals were involved with making that. We actually, and
no animals,
I think Alex even emailed Dave and was like, what were we doing there?
Yeah.
And Alex is,
he's the guitar player who's playing that part when we play it live.
Last name, sorry.
Oh, Alex Fischel, sorry.
But like, we in the control room when we were tracking that, there's like literally like 20 pedals just spread around the control room.
Some were on,
some were plugged in, some weren't. There was a guitar pedal with a joystick. I still don't even know what that one does. You know,
it didn't do anything. It was just a throw.
It made out of, yeah. The other funny thing about Dave, I feel like he, like Britt said, he's so mild mannered, but then like we would be like, do you guys think this is too distorted? And he would be like, I'm the wrong person to ask about that, because he, like, you know, loves distortion, and he likes things dirty and exciting and crazy and weird, you know.
So yeah, it doesn't even sound like distortion to him.
Yeah. And he said after working with the Flaming Lips and doing a lot of those records, it just, like, things only sounded right when they were distorted, which is, I understand that the more work you do, you start getting a sound. So. But it was funny because we were sometimes questioning if there was too much distortion. He's like, I don't know, you know, wrong person.
Don't ask me.
Yeah.
All perspective.
You guys talk about
gone.
That. Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned working with Alex Fischel. Is this the first Spoon record he's been on?
Yeah, it is. Yep. Well, he played with me in Divine Fits.
Right.
I guess I met him as the band was forming, and we loved him, and so he became a member of the band. And
how'd you guys meet?
Dan from Divine Fits had played a show where... Well, Dan had a band called Handsome Furs, and Alex was in a band called...
It wasn't Papa, was it?
Yeah, Papa, mm-hmm. And they were opening for Handsome Furs. It was kind of a long story, but I guess Dan saw Alex do a version of... what was that song? The Nick Lowe song.
Yeah.
Something that just blew Dan's mind.
That's,
and
like,
he
a
said,
crazy piano solo in the middle or something, right?
He said, you got to bring this guy in and see what he can do.
As a keyboard player, he...
Right, yeah. right. And now he's... He's learning a lot. He's playing guitar and keyboards.
Did he bring some of the synth textures and the sort of ambient sounds that we're hearing?
Uh-huh,
this
yeah,
record?
For sure.
Let's hear the top of New York Kiss, and you can tell us about this.
Hit me good, it's gonna blow.
Did the song start with that arpeggiated keyboard thing?
That was an overdub we came up with later.
Huh. Feels so weird.
That was that Eric that came up with that? Eric came up with a few things
Eric,
there. There's
so,
a lot
yeah.
going on there. There's like a marimba. There's that arpeggiated thing. There's like a weird guitar.
Alex and I were working on some of that stuff too, I think. And it was like twice as long or three times as long before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. Do you ever play to a click track? Do you ever lock together in some way? This song felt like that might have happened. Everything seems so completely glued together.
I mean, during the recording, yeah. But a lot of times you can take an arpeggio and you can ballpark it too, you know.
Explain that to people. There are two things that just happened. One is that we just talked about a click track, which means a metronome basically in everybody's ear, so that everybody is locked to the same thing. And usually that thing is what's happening on the machine. So if there's a synth pattern or something or some drum sound or whatever, that everybody is locked to that thing. So that's the first thing. But then you went on to say how people are locked to the arpeggiator. Can you just tell the layman what the heck you're talking about, Mr. Jim?
Well, yeah, like an arpeggio has like sort of a similar thing, like a click or a clock, and you can adjust that on the keyboard, and a lot of times you can do that in real time if the song wasn't to a click.
So that's when you hear the bum 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 bum
yeah.
bum bum.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you hold down one note.
Or like a chord, and it goes between, you know,
the three or four
third
notes.
Fifth, first, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then that's why I thought when I heard that, I thought it must have been the beginning of the song because that's almost harder to add in later. But
yeah, I think we went backwards.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
So
you had a real Eurythmics vibe for a while there.
Yeah, there you go. Hang on.
It's not a bad thing.
What? Eurythmics?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I know it's not.
You both had these different experiences, and Britt, you told us how, you've brought in your keyboard player, guitar player from Divine Fits, and that experience, while you were not spooning, so to speak, is what you kind of brought to the table coming back from being away. And Jim, I've been to your studio and know you've been doing so many great productions. What did you bring to the band that maybe hadn't been there before, having taken time off?
Oh boy, I don't know.
Well, Jim learned. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you did some great work as a producer that just kind of blew my mind. And I knew that, like that Chick 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 record you did was just amazing. Yeah. You had to have learned some stuff from that. I don't know if you can specify, but he just spent so much time producing that I think he came into this with a lot of new ideas.
I mean, one thing I feel like, I did a lot of records really fast, too. Like that My Jerusalem record was done in 15 to 17 days. Same with that Telekinesis record. So I feel like...
Great record.
At least could sort of say, hey, let's parallelize this. Let's you go and do some of this stuff, and me and Alex will work here try to, like... figure out any way that we can do things faster. I feel like
we did some multitasking.
Yeah, like a lot of it. You know, like, okay, someone's upstairs doing some editing. We're working on another solo part. Britt's writing lyrics, you know. I don't know. I feel like maybe that was a little bit different because it's hard to make a record in 15 or 17 days, you know.
Is that what you did here?
So,
No. Yeah, I was going to say.
we made it happen a lot faster than we would have before.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Did you record all of this in Dave Fridden's studio in Fredonia, New York?
No, the part that we did with Joe, we did either in L.A. at Sunset Sound or at Jim's studio. And then once that was done, we mixed that at Dave's place. And then the second half we did record up in Fredonia with Dave.
And for you, that's the first half and a second half. Is that the way the record is split, or are the songs all mixed up? I mean,
they're mixed up. We thought about doing it that way, but I feel like the flow just worked. It ends up actually that the second half features more in the first half of the album.
Okay.
So did you stayed in Fredonia while you were working on that? It's like 11,000 people there. I'm wondering what you guys did.
Yeah, we actually were in Casadega. About 20 minutes away from Fredonia.
Yeah, which is about
Fredonia's
65
a big town.
People.
So what'd you do when you weren't in the studio?
We lived in the studio. I mean, we stayed in the studio.
Paced around, watched laser discs.
There's a movie called The Shining.
You heard of it?
I've seen it many times. Bob, that may be a movie you've actually been seeing.
Yeah, even me.
So you felt like you were losing your minds at some point?
At times, yeah. It's intense. It's intense up there. Especially, you know, we're doing it in the thick of winter. and it was, what, 8 degrees below for a few days in a row there,
yeah,
and
yeah,
just so much snow that you couldn't really get out.
Yeah. When we're mixing, too, Dave would say, well, I'm going to work on this. And 8 hours later, he would say, okay, come on in and listen. So we're just, you know, you got to find something to do for 8 hours, you know. Mm. He has a lot of great gear and everything, but it was a little...
That's how we recorded. I just don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Fighting the madness.
Whenever I'm working on a creative project, I can't be trapped in my head like that for very long. I just do, I go stir crazy.
Yeah, we were a bit stir crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it turned out well. I think it was worth it.
Let's play a bit of the song I Just Don't Understand.
Will you call me your baby when you're holding my hand? But the way that you hurt me, I just don't understand. Will you say that you need me?
So there are two versions of this song I know. One was the Beatles. And the other is Anne Margaret. Were either of those your source of inspiration? This is not your... You didn't write this song.
Right. Anne Margaret was... I was assigned to record a song for Rookie Magazine, and the person who... A friend of mine, Jessica Hopper, who assigned... She said, but maybe you should try this this song. One of them was an Anne Margaret song. And so I sat down, tried to play the Anne Margaret song myself. I said to myself, this sounds like something that John Lennon would like.
Or seriously?
Like a phrasing or a melody that he would like. Then I later realized he had covered it.
More than
so
like.
I felt like I made this mystery connection to him. Like, I get this guy.
Well, you say that you need me like the ocean needs sand. But the way you mistreat me, I just don't understand. Well, you know that I love you more than anyone can. But a one-sided...
There's a brilliant fuzz guitar for, what, 1961?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought it was a trumpet at first, the first couple notes.
It's awesome. Almost surprised that given that such a distinctive sound in that song that maybe it didn't get used. You really do sound like, I don't know if you wound up hearing the Beatles song version, which we can play just a half second of.
I thought you were going to say it really sounds like Anne Margaret.
Looks like her too. Anne Margaret was a great...
That's not a bad thing.
No, that's a Swedish American actress, quite beautiful, not known for her pop music so much as some of the acting roles. Hang on, here it comes.
But the way that you hurt me, I just don't understand.
Okay, this or Spoon. Let's hear the Spoon. Listeners, vote.
When you're holding my hand.
It's pretty good.
And we'll be right back with the results of our online poll. You know, you got a little bit of the honky-tonk piano sound in there, for sure.
Yeah, and almost a little British accent there.
Yeah, that's the one that while Dave was going and doing his mammoth, his marathon mixing sessions, we had time to ourselves, and he has this spare room. So we went and recorded this track that we thought was going to be just used on a website, but we thought it was so good that we ended up just putting it on the record.
Well, I remember you're like, hey, come and play drums on this, and I played drums. It was like second take. And then the next day, you're like, you got to come in and hear this. And I'm like, put the headphones on. I'm like, oh, wow, that's awesome. Because you had all the piano stuff you were working on and everything. Yeah, it was like.
This is too good for.
Too good.
Too good for Rookie. I had to then go and record another song for Rookie.
I'm going to play this.
Yeah, I know that.
You've been a band for how long now?
About 20 years.
And this song is about?
I think this is probably the first song we ever did.
Yeah, one of the, yeah.
If not the first, then one of the first three, then it was from 93 that I came up with it.
And it's called The Government.
The very first rehearsals.
The Government Darling. you hear this stuff, and let's just hear a second of it. Where do you think you've come?
Well, when we started out, I mean, I had never been in a band that got to, that was successful enough to have weekend gigs in Austin. And so our big thing was let's get a live show together that's good enough to get, you know, to play at the Hole in the Wall on Friday night. You know, so those first, you know, year and a half worth of songs is all sort of bar band, play as fast and loud as we could so that we could get people to come out and see us. And then later we, you know, got in a position where we could actually make records. And so then we started thinking about writing songs and recording songs in a different way. I really feel like the sound of the band started to come together on our second album and really came together on the third one with Girls Can Tell.
Once you finally had some time to work on it, it sounds like.
Yeah, and sort of get into this mode of like, well, this isn't just going to be about trying to get a weekend gig. This is about like making a record and a document that you're going to want to put on for, well, hopefully for the rest of your life, you know.
Has it gotten any easier, the songwriting and producing? Has it gotten any easier over the years? Or are there things you've learned to let go of or things you've learned that you need to hold on to in the process?
I wouldn't say it's gotten easier. I don't think it ever gets, if it's strictly easy, then you're getting very, very lucky or else you're not trying hard enough. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why we've been making records for so long and we still make ones that are so good is that, you know, we don't let it just, it's not something we just let happen, you know.
So many of your records have felt very precisely orchestrated, you know, almost meticulous at times. And this new record, They Want My Soul, feels a lot looser to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what you think, if that's intentional or...
True, or
maybe I'm just imagining it.
I think it's a looser sounding, definitely a lot looser sounding than the record before and the one before that.
Yeah.
There's a little more spurts of chaos, I think, at mm-hmm. times yeah. for me.
And I feel like I can hear that we're having fun while we're recording it. I don't know. I feel like that, oh, that was cool, a little happy accident. Let's leave that, you know, or...
Which is the role of a good producer, something I'm sure you've discovered and done yeah. a gazillion times as a producer.
Right.
Yeah. How formed are these songs when you walk into the studio? Is there room for those happy accidents?
Yeah. A lot of happy accidents just come from recording, you know, and just incidental things that happen because a microphone was on that you didn't know was on. By the time we start recording and we usually have a good sense of, you know, the arrangement, it's a process, you know. I mean, we're working on lyrics and working on parts the whole way through, but maybe we'll just have like a general outline of what the song's going to be like when we start recording.
Tell us about Jonathan Fisk and why he wants your soul.
Well, Jonathan Fisk was a character in a song from Kill the Moonlight, and it was based on a guy who used to beat me up as I was walking home from middle school. And so when I'm writing this song, this new song, They Want My Soul, about, you could say, soul suckers in general, he was one of the people that came up. It's a song about religious pretenders, manipulators, educated folk singers, people that bring me down, you know, and Jonathan Fisk was one of them for sure.
Have you looked for him on Facebook, Google, to see what he's up to now?
We actually became friends later.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Believe it or not.
Really want to make up.
He became a big Spoon fan. He did. He came to a lot of shows. He really went through a change, like in high school, and then by the time he was in college, you know, like all the people from my high school ended up knowing each other, and everybody just basically moved to Austin, and so I was around this dude for a good 5-10 years after. High school.
You graduated, I think you're a couple years older than me. I think you've got your 25th high school reunion coming up.
You guys going to dance?
Yeah, maybe so.
Not you and Robin, I mean you and Jonathan.
Have you gone to any of reunions?
I have. They're fascinating, those reunions. It's really bizarre to see all these people that you haven't thought about in so long. And then all of a sudden there they are in the flesh.
The last photo you have in your brain of them is they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly everyone's, well, my age. Let's hear a little bit of They Want My Soul.
Maybe you guys should play for the 25th anniversary, 25th reunion, right? I didn't hear any laughs
no,
on that.
No, that went over like a lead balloon. Any drum machines on this record at all?
Yeah, there's some songs that Dave programmed beats for. There was Inside Out and...
Knock, Knock, Knock.
Yeah, Knock, 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 right, yeah.
Do you like working with that stuff, Jim?
Yeah, but I mean, it's cool for Inside Out. I think we had demoed that, and the way we started the programming of that was from what I played on
right.
that. So it does have sort of a... Obviously, that changed, too, but, like, the initial thing, it was very close to what I played, so maybe felt a little more real.
Yeah, the original song was just me and a piano, and I thought it was quite good, but it needed a something. So we had this bizarre idea to try to make it more like a Dr. Dre track, and this is what turned out.
Let's hear. Time is a pretty funny thing. Could you have imagined you'd be doing this for 20 years, and could you imagine doing this for 10 or 20 more, and what you would become?
I always wanted to. I always wanted to. As soon as I started being able to work the record player in my living room, I would just stare at those gatefold record sleeves, and that's what I wanted to do. But I never counted on it. It's great to be able to do it, though.
And maybe do it till you're Paul McCartney's age?
I don't know what else I want to do.
Or qualify to do.
Right, exactly, yeah. At this point.
Well, I love the record.
Very
Thanks.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a good one. I'm real pleased with it.
Thanks so much, both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Guys. Thanks for having us.
Jim Eno, Britt Daniel from Spoon. The new record's called They Want My Soul. I'm Bob Boylan along with Robin Hilton for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.